Lecture number 8. Last time we had our meeting together, we were talking about sequences. We were talking about certain spaces that this could belong, say, to a little L2 space. That was the equivalent that the sequence we're talking about, real sequences, at this property. This could belong to a little L1 space. That's equivalent to the statement that some of the absolute values are finite. We also introduced the idea of sequences which belong to the nuclear space N. That was equivalent to sequences for which this particular sum n to the power r t to the n squared sum from 1 to infinity was finite for r equals 0, 1, 2, and 3. These spaces have natural topologies. I know that word scares physicists. It generally scares me, so I'm not surprised that it scares some of you. All it means is there is a notion of convergence. And if I take a sequence of such sequences, I know what I mean by convergence. And we talked about that, that this is obviously an L2 condition should work, etc., L1 condition, and all these things should work. So far we haven't talked about functional representation, so let's do that today. So we're going to introduce from sequences to functions. We're dealing with real sequences, so we'll deal with real functions. And the key idea is, again, have a sequence of functions which form a real, complete orthonormal set, by which I mean the following conditions are true. Let's take the real line, x belongs in the whole real line. So I have hn of x, hm of x dx is delta nm, that's 1 or 0. And likewise, if I take hn of x, hn of y, sum of n equals 1 to infinity, this converges in the sense of distributions to a Dirac delta function. So these are the two conditions for a real complete orthonormal set. And with that, I can pass from sequences, I can go from sequences to functions and back again, as you are well aware. Let's start with the TNs and sum those and we'll call their functions they make f of x. The choice of functions I get out of that depends very much on the choice of the space of the TNs I have chosen. For example, if I am in the little L2 sense, then we can compute the integrals, again, without limits are always plus to minus infinity. This will be summation of Tn squared, and if that's finite, then this integral is finite, and in fact equal to So that's one connection you're familiar with in this situation. There is a relation I should have said down here that is the inverse to this. So this is a partner pair with this. That the Tn is indeed nothing more than the integral of hn of x times f of x dx. There's no complex conjugate because everything's real here. In particular, there is the space of nuclear functions. So f of x given by the sequence of these orthonormal family and the sequence Tn mapped in this particular way into the fx. Since the Tn's are so rapidly falling off as they do on the last line over there, then this is a pointwise convergence to this function f of x, which is therefore continuous. And, well, I haven't told you what the properties of Hn are yet, so I better be careful about continuity. Okay, so let's give it an example of the Hn. And this is a kind of standard familiar example. The only tragic thing about it, it's not indexed in the standard way. What I want to talk about are the so-called harmonic oscillator eigenfunctions, so-called Hermite functions. And I will call them Hn of x with a capital H upstairs to remind them that they are Hermite. And here, the indexing is n equals 0, 1, 2, and 3. This is the typical Brown state situation. So our connection would be here that my Hn plus 1 of x could be taken as the Hermite function with the family, with a relationship with an n. It could be 0, 1, 2, and 3. So when little h is, when n is 0 here, that's the ground state of the harmonic oscillator being mapped onto the first one of my particular family. And just to remind you of the what the h functions are, here is the generating function for the Hermite functions as related to the Hermite polynomials times a fixed Gaussian. And that's given by e to the minus s squared plus 2sx minus 1 half x squared. That function is equal to pi to the 1 quarter summation n equals 0 to infinity 1 over square root n factorial s times square root of 2 to power n times my Hermite function. So all I have to do is expand the left side out in powers of s, and that will display for me these particular functions. I won't write them down other than to say that the ground state is taken to be e to the minus 1 half x squared is the normalization of pi to the 1 quarter. That pi to the 1 quarter comes when you put this on that side of the problem and isolate that. And h1, h of x, I can't even remember whether that's also 1 or not, but so up to a constant, maybe, which I don't forget, which I don't remember. Anyway, this is x times a Gaussian, this is a Gaussian, et cetera, et cetera. And the rest are just Hermite polynomials times that Gaussian. Okay, very good.
Now,
So we have our space of n functions. These are called test functions. And actually, if I do choose the Hermite functions themselves, as I am indicating as a good choice, then they even have a very special name. These are called tempered distribution test functions.
Can you repeat that?
Can I repeat it? They're called the tempered?
No. What do you have to do to make it tempered?
Choose this particular set. Choose this. If I do that, then that becomes, and I map the sequences with those functions into ordinary functions over here on the real line, then those become the standard tempered. It's called, the space is called S on the real line. That's Schwarz's spaces. Very famous test functions. They have the property that these functions have the property that derivatives, arbitrary derivatives, arbitrary powers, limit as x in magnitude goes to infinity, equals zero for all n and m. So this is how these functions are actually defined by themselves in the X space.
Okay, now,
corresponding to the mapping of the test elements, the T's, into functions, whether we restrict the T's in the L2 sense, the L1 sense, or this N sense, sounds like int sense, let's talk about the, so these are good functions. Remember I used the word good and bad before? These are good functions. We had good sequences, now we have good functions. Good because they behave nicely, okay? Like good little children. We had the bad sequences, now let's talk about bad functions. Question? I can't hear you.
The limit of x going to infinity.
Absolute x going to infinity. So x goes to either plus or minus infinity. So we had our bad sequences. Those are the xn's, as we have frequently called them, n equals 1 to infinity. For example, our measure, our standard measure that we talk so much about, was not supported. If we insisted that this be true, then the measure of that was 0. On the other hand, if I put my lambda n inside, we got 1, so the xn's did not grow absolutely arbitrarily, but they were could be bounded in this way. For example, we can capture them by a 1 over n squared. That's a good enough lambda, and that would characterize the support. Now, that's not the tightest support, but that is the correct characterization of the support. And another characterization we had was the limit 1 over p, sum from 1 to cap p of xp squared was p inverse. That was 1, 2. Okay, anyway, these are, by no means, these are not test sequences. They are not well-behaved like that. And we want to map those into functions. Well, that's a little tricky, but nevertheless, we write it that way. And I will do that. We're going to use the same elements of our orthonormal basis, and we'll call those phi of x. Now, here the convergence is generally not pointwise. Convergence It's generally not pointwise.
In fact, the convergent up here is typically not pointwise, even when we have this. We have to have the L1 situation to have pointwise.
Not even almost
integrated? Yeah, that's something else, but that's it's not pointwise. Okay. So this is going to map some of this bad guys into these. However, how do we say these things converge? We say this series converges in the sense of distributions. In the sense of distributions. Meaning, you don't evaluate it, you integrate. So let's bring up our nice function f. This is a good function, and we're bringing it up to a bad function, so-called. And we'll discuss what the meaning of this integral is in a moment. It's not going to be really an integral. So that means I have this sum, xn hn of x, summation tm hm of x, then I integrate dx over that. This gives me a Kronecker delta, and I'm going to get my sum from n equal 1 to infinity of the tn times the xn. Ah, that's nice. I was happy with this in the last lecture because the behavior of the tn's was such that it always caught the property of the xn's. The xn's were polynomially bounded by a plus b n to the c. There was always an a, b, c for which captured all these xn's. And since these fall off faster than any polynomial, this is always going to be well defined. And this property will be giving us a well defined answer for this thing over here. Indeed, people often call this, and it's a proper notation, that this is the distribution phi acting on the function f. That's a better way to say that. This is not an integral, because the integrand is not well behaved. This is a generalized function, and it's better to call this a linear functional. That's what it is, linear functional. And I'm going to begin to use the notation of integrals for linear functionals beyond their usual traditional use.
Would a Dirac delta function qualify as psi of x?
Absolutely right. Let's make a Dirac delta function. So all I have to do is take my hx's here to be hn of xc, some point, and then use this property, which may or may be here still on the board, and that gives me a delta of xc minus x. So that is a family of x's which would do the right trick for that. So that's indeed such a thing. Okay. So that means where we have before talked about sequences, we can equally well talk about functions. And in many cases, it's much more appropriate to do so. It's perhaps better adapted to the problem at hand. C of f, the associated function here associated with a sequence. Now comes the notational thing.
In your definition of the distribution, you have omitted the capital H on the HN. Is that
right? I was not insisting that these be the Hermite functions. I tell you that, again, if they are the Hermite functions, then the space that you make this way with these kind of x's are called tempered distributions. They have a standard
special.
Special, and that's called S prime, which is the space of distributions, the dual space to our test function space S. But I want to free us. I mean, this for 98% of what you'll ever do, these are adequate test functions, and these are adequate distributions. But I want you to have the appreciation that it's not the end of the world, that you can have other things. So, Okay, so what are we going to call a function of a function? And in the literature, it gets many names. So this is one choice. This is another choice. So all these three things could be used, have been used, are being used as possible choices for functions of functions. And probably I will slip from one to another. And if you want to know which one it is, or what's it really referring to, you have to ask me. The point of having something other than this is to emphasize that the argument are not points in a finite dimensional space, but the argument are points in an infinite dimensional space, like the TNs would be, or points in an infinite dimensional functional space. Okay, so let's choose a notation, for example. Let's choose this one. And so we can say that our characteristic function would be given by e to the I. Before we had summation of the tn xn, but I'm not going to replace that by this other expression. So phi x f of x dx, that's the same thing as our summation on the tn's and xn's, with a measure concentrated on the phi. Now, in principle, that could be a wiggly too, but I'm not customary to do that, so this is what I... And I will probably slip pretty soon to this or something else. I'm just warning you that nothing's sacred here. So last time we were together, we also talked about the Bochner-Minlow's theorem. Give it to you in a sequence form. Now we can give it to you in a functional form. And here you go, guys. You're going to get right away the mixed notation here. And C of F is continuous in the sense of n. And the sense of n is the continuity inherited by the functions, by the rule of continuity that the sequences have. In point of fact, if you're going to look at the functions all by themselves, you have a sequence of the functions, and you want to know that the sequence of the functions converges to the zero element. It's a linear vector space, it doesn't matter, because if it converges to f, I just bring it to the other side and subtract it. In the sense of the space S, for example, that's our case with the Hermite polynomial number, then what you ask, we did it for the t's, but now I do it straight away for the functions. Then all the derivatives and all the powers, and then I take a supremum over the x points, and then I take the limit as j goes to infinity, and that should be zero. Okay, a little ugly.
The supremum of what?
Supremum of what's left, what to the left, to the right of it, supremum of all that. I better put absolute values here so I have some supremum to work with. Okay, just a rule. A rule. It's almost never that you have to go into the details to see if the rule is correct or not.
I think it means that your soup is x element of infinity, like x element.
What
do you want to say? Probably x element
of the root. Sure, thank you. All right. Soup over the x on the real line. And this can be expanded to several dimensions. The x doesn't have to be one dimensional, it could be several dimensions. And I would have to have mixed partials, mixed powers, and then the soup would be over x points in all the particles. Okay. Okay, so we had all this, and if this is true, then the Mindler-Barnhouse theorem says that function C is indeed the Fourier transform of a probability measure, and the support of that space is on the space S prime, assuming we've taken S, or more generally on N prime. And again, that's typically a generous support, and in particular cases, it may well be supported on something smaller. All right. Now, we're going to change chapters, getting closer to good stuff, I promise you, but not yet. Yep.
If the sequence converges to something.
Say it one more time.
If the sequence converges to something.
Yes.
Its characteristic function will always converge to something.
Well, that's what did you mean by the characteristic function is continuous in that sense. Therefore, the limit, if this thing equals f, j to infinity in the sense of n, which could be s, then this thing being continuous means that the limit as j goes to infinity c of fj, and I like to do it this way, is to bring the limit inside, which is, of course, just that.
That's always true.
If it's continuous. Well, that's part of the hypothesis to this. But, stated the other way around, if I have a probability measure and I take its Fourier transform, then this function will have all these properties. It will be continuous. It will have these properties. All righty. Chapter 4. Chapter 4 is called Functional Techniques. And first, when we talk about this 4.1, functional derivatives. When we have functions of a single variable, we talk about d by dx. When we have functions of several variables, we talk about the gradient, or d by dxj, depending on the particular coordinates. When we get to functions of functions, we want to generalize this idea. So how's that going to work? Let's call f our functional. And just to make it very equal opportunity for everybody, we're going to use this notation for our function right now. So we have a functional f on the little f's. And the little f's belong to a space. A space for which this thing is well defined. Let me call that space N. It's the kind of space we've been talking about. It doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be a test function space here. Let's make it a little more general. Let's make it U, okay? A nice space of functions. For example, that was part of your exercise in the homework on problem 4, when I threw in different weightings for the Tn squared sequence. You were to, hopefully, those of you who haven't turned it in, can pick up a pointer here, is to see that it wasn't always some Tn squared which was the relevant thing. Sometimes you had different things to deal with. So there's some space. So U is my space. U may be a linear vector space. Which means that F1 and F2 are elements of that space, then I can take arbitrary linear combinations. And let's assume that for the case, special case. There are counterexamples to that, but let's assume that. And so we're going to look at the situation where I have F of function F plus function V, not H, I think, H, with coefficient B. Okay. So B is in our reals. This is our coefficient. And F and H are in R space, for which is defined. And I assume that this is well defined for B in some interval around zero. So, okay, hard to draw it, so I won't draw it. Then I take the derivative of that quantity, with respect to B. Not all functions have derivatives. I'm assuming this is a function of B which has a derivative. I'm then going to set B equal to zero after having taken the derivative. I tell you the answer depends on the function h of x in a linear way. And the coefficient of that property h is what we call the functional derivative. Now this is the careful way to make the definition. There is a quick and dirty, crude way to make it, and I will talk about that in a minute too. Let's do an example. Let's take f of f, integral f of x squared dx. So big F of f plus bh. It is f of x squared plus 2b f of x h of x plus b squared h squared of x dx. Df of f plus bh dv is 2 f of x h of x dx plus 2b h squared of x dx. After taking the derivative, I now set b equal to 0. So I think that thing I set b equal to 0. Only that term survives. Therefore, this coefficient in here is that. In our example then, 2 f of x is what we mean by the functional derivative of f with respect to f of x. For that example. Now, let me show you the physicist's way to do this. Casual definition. F of F plus B times delta function of the argument X, which is here, minus some point Y, let's say. Then I take the derivative with respect to B and set B equal to 0. And that gives me straight away something depending on Y
which is a candidate for the functional derivative?
Df dy.
If I got to this point
in the calculation, and I then let h of x become a delta function at x minus y, then it will pick out 2 of fy, which will be the permittance. However, let's pursue the chain of description here that the physicists want us to do. So we take, let's do our example, f of x squared plus 2b f of x delta of x minus y dx plus b squared integral delta of x minus y squared dx. That equals f of x squared dx. Well, let's do the derivative. At least make progress that way. So the b derivative is here. That gives me 2. Now this delta function immediately evaluates that as f of y. Good. Over here I have 2 times b times infinity. I don't care how you want to calculate it, but the integral of delta squared is infinity. And so now I say, let's let b equal to 0. And they come out with 2fy. That means they're taking a sequence, which is infinity, 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 as b gets smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, b is 1/10, 1/100, 1, etc., etc. And then finally, out of that, they get 0 is the answer. You know, I like to always cite my mother. My mother knew nothing about mathematics. She knew nothing about particle physics. When I told her once, when I came home, I said, I work a little bit on particle physics. She said, so do I. All the dust I have to deal with. Okay? So she didn't know anything. But I tell you, if it can't pass the test of how my mother would want to calculate this, then you haven't formulated your mathematical problem correctly. And my mother would say, infinity, 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 you get infinity out of that, right? You don't get 0.
Well, this is like you said, it depends on which order you take your limits.
And I am telling you the order, right? I put this function in, I have computed it, then I take the derivative with respect to b. It's already, I cannot set b equal to 0 by 4. I take the derivative, can I? So I've got to evaluate it first, then take the derivative. Okay, what is their answer? Oh, well, we don't call that infinity, right? Right? In other words, they have not used a true delta function. They have used a function h over there, whose square is well behaved. And then later, they let the h go to the delta function to get it. Okay, I have no objection with the result many times. But sometimes you can get into trouble. And you should be aware that there's another way to do it. Yes, sir.
Do you have a pathological example?
Well, let's take the following situation. I don't know, you're catching me off guard here, so I'm just guessing. Let us take f of x plus and then f of x minus epsilon. Let's take the limit. Well, let me think about that, okay? I'm trying to come back to you a bit. It involves when you don't want to put a distribution in, when you don't want to make this function h a delta function,
because the space that you were allowed to deal with can include discontinuous functions. And the delta function is only allowed to see continuous functions. That's its test space. So if I take h, if I say delta at 0, and I put in the Heaviside function or some other function, well, theta is their favorite function, theta of x, dx. And that evaluates theta at 0. But theta is defined to be 1 for x positive. Theta is minus 1 for x negative. And some books will give you different answers. So they'll take a half, or I could put in 37 pi, or anything in the middle. It would not make a difference to any normal integral. But here you're multiplying two distributions. And multiplication of distributions is threatening. It's dangerous. You can get different answers. So this is theta of 0, and that depends on the definition.
So I would say that's an example where a casual use of that would be in trouble, potentially trouble. Okay. Let us turn our attention from functional derivatives. Oh, yeah, we should take a second functional derivative. We have our example here. That gives us 2 f of x. And then we take a second derivative at f of y of that. And I won't go through the details, but you know the answer. You're going to get 2 times delta of x minus y, which means that delta of f of x at the point f of x is infinity. So that means that the functional derivative of certain functions diverges. Well, so be it. The ordinary derivative of certain functions diverges in certain places. This is something you didn't expect it to give a divergence for a simple polynomial, but that's the way it is.
Okay.
Can you go around that just by saying you must always take the functional derivative on the bottom with respect to another unit variable that you're
original? No. Sometimes you want it. We want to talk eventually, we're going to talk soon, or eventually anyway, about functional differential equations. We have ordinary differential equations, we have partial differential equations. We're going to be talking about functional differential equations. In particular, we're going to be talking about this kind of functional differential equation, the second derivative of f of x squared at the same point. And for some functions, that will work out to be finite, but for some others, it will not be. Okay.
So actually, your integral there, integral f of x squared dx, it's actually from minus infinity to x.
Which one? Here?
No, okay, the next one. The definition of the functional form of f.
Here?
The one above it.
Here?
Yeah.
I want to do that. Why did you say what you said?
Because you want capital F of small f to be a function of x. Right?
Oh, no. No, 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 on the contrary. It's independent of x. In fact, this thing is often written this way.
It's a function of.
To indicate that there is literally no x there. And when physicists write that x there, they are misleading you because it doesn't depend on x. It is telling you what the function is a function of, but it gets dissipated when you build the function off. Okay, I want to go to 4.2, which is functional Fourier transformations. When we have a finite number of variables, and points x in Rn, and we'll talk about their Fourier points P being in Rn as Rn as well. Then this with a kind of normalization, I'll set any constants, like dimensional constants I set to be unity. We'll use this to define the Fourier transform. I like to use a tilde. Mathematics literature these days uses a caret, but I grew up before carets were popular. And the inverse of that. I'm not being specific on how nice it has to be, but falls at infinity rather well, many derivatives, etc. Then this transformation is pointwise, and u of p will automatically have the same properties, and so the inverse is literally that. So these are both good functions, and this is a perfectly well-defined interval. What happens when n goes to infinity? So n goes to infinity, then we don't give a name to this coefficient any longer. We don't write it what it numerically is, which is quite a zero. 2 pi to the infinity is infinity, and the denominator there would be zero. We can symbolize it with a constant. Up here we have our summation from 1 to infinity of the pn xn's, u of all the x's. This is frequently called a curly dx. And that gives our u of p's tilde and vice versa. To interpret these symbols, I like to ask you to interpret them as linear functionals. Meaning that u of p is given by some linear operation which depends on that p sequence acting on functions of u of x. You bring up a function u of x, there is a linear operation on that which converts it into this function. Likewise, there is a, call it l minus 1, of x which acts on the function we just created and gives it back to you. Now, linear functional, there's not much information in this l. So I would like to regard all of these symbols as belonging to the notion of linear functional. I don't want you to treat M prime as something separate to take away and use it or evaluate it by itself. These things belong together. That belongs together, that belongs together, that belongs together. All of those things make up the linear functional which acts on the U.
and this is schematically a little pictorial way to help you do that. I'd like to give the following example, except we're just out of time. So that will have to wait until we find ourselves together on Friday. Peace. Do we have any more homeworks to collect, or